Ford cast, a Harrison Ford podcast. I almost said the wrong opening, but I caught myself halfway through.
Oh, no. Did you say the wrong podcast? Because you have so many podcasts.
I almost was like, welcome to Hard Bodies. And then I was like waiting for you to continue. I was like, oh, no, wait. That's not how this works. I'm doing great, guys. Great day.
Yeah. Mostly because we're talking about presumed innocent, which 4% of you wanted to hear about.
Yeah.
It took a poll of the next five movies coming up, and this got 4%. So welcome, everybody. We'll be talking about other things. It's still some interesting stuff to talk about, but more people are interested in The Fugitive. More people are interested in Regarding Henry, which makes sense.
I was talking about this podcast on Sunday, and some guy was like, oh, well, yeah. He was trying to figure out what presumed innocence was. And so I explained presumed. He goes, oh, no, then I'm thinking of Witness. That is Tommy Lee Jones. And I was like, no. And the guy was like, yeah, you know, where he's like, my wife. And I was like, okay, then that's definitely not Witness. He's like, well, I was like, Witness is about Amish people. And he was like, oh, really? Like, it was like the guy took forever to realize he was wrong.
Well, it kind of actually makes sense that he might be confused, because we're starting to get into that territory of leave my family alone, leave my wife alone. Like, we're getting into that sort of territory where he does that a lot.
Yeah, because this guy was so confused.
Yeah, he spent the entire 90s protecting his family.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, by the way, guys. Hi, I'm Rachel.
Hi, I'm Lauren.
We just started.
I hope by now people know who we are, but it is good to remind them whose voice is who.
Yeah.
Because we sound so similar.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want me to do the summary since you have...
I don't really like this movie, so yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I refuse to rewatch and I refuse to look up... Like, I'm just going off of my memory of it because I remember watching it and it took me like 4 days.
So would this be like your version of Hollywood Homicide where I will refuse to watch Hollywood Homicide again?
No, I mean, like, most of these, I don't mind like going and watching a couple scenes to refresh my memory.
Sure, yeah.
But this is one of those that I was just like, no, I remember enough of it that I don't want to.
It's much drier than I remember. Like,
isn't the guy from The West Wing in it?
Oh my God, there's three people from The West Wing in it, and I'm so excited.
I was like, I know Bradley Whitford?
Whitford, yeah.
He was in it because I was like, LOL, and I like took a picture of him. And there was someone else that I recognized.
Well, John Spencer plays the detective.
I know that is.
John Spencer played Leo McGarry on The West Wing.
Okay, I've never seen The West Wing. I just know.
I know, and it's okay, and that's all right. I am a expert. I used to host trivia on The West Wing. I know everything about it. It is my absolute favorite show of all time. So I was very excited about this. And when I was a kid, I remember enjoying it, but watching it as an adult, I was like, okay, this is good, but it's a little dry.
Mm-hmm.
It's slow. I'm enjoying it, but I don't think I want to see it again. So anyways, for those who haven't seen it, this is pretty much the gist of Presumed Innocent. I wasn't prepared for this, so here we go.
I mean, hold on. We're going to tag team it. I'll start it.
You want to start?
And just fill in what
I feel like that's what we do anyway.
Yes.
So, okay.
This movie follows the death of Harrison Ford's lover, who I believe is his coworker.
Yes.
Who is also a detective.
No, and that's funny that you say that, because I thought he was a detective and she was an attorney, and then when I watched it again...
They're both attorneys.
Right, yeah.
Right, they're attorneys. So, I remember now. So, him and her, like, are working on a case, and people, like, assume they slept together, and they were right. They did. And so, when she gets murdered, they blame him. And the whole movie is him trying to, like, defend his innocence, say he didn't do it.
And we don't know if he didn't do it.
We don't know. They're trying to figure it out. At the end of the movie, he realizes jealous-ass wife did it. And, like, I don't know.
That's kind of the gist of the movie.
Is like the whole movie is I'm trying to be like, you didn't do it.
He's the assistant district attorney. Mm-hmm. And then his boss, played by the amazing Brian Dennehy. The cast is unbelievable.
Isn't that Tommy's dad?
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember.
Yeah. Brian Dennehy, who... I mean, Raul Julia is in this movie again. John Spencer, Bradley Whitford, Bonnie Bedelia. Like, all these sort of amazing actors are in this movie. And we'll go through more of that later. But... where was I?
That's the gist of the movie.
Oh, yeah, that's the gist of the movie. Is that Brian Dennehy doesn't win re-election, so therefore he's not in office anymore, and then you're not sure if, like, he's being framed by the other administration or he actually did it, and then he gets off on a technicality. But in the book, apparently, he gets exonerated, like, completely. Mm-hmm. And you don't know till the very, very end. Like, they keep hinting that maybe he did it, except, one, I knew that Bonnie Bedelia, playing his wife, did it, so that kind of took the suspense away. But also, I was like, Harrison Ford, except for one movie, which we won't give away, is never the bad guy.
I want you to give away what the movie is, because I don't know what movie you're talking about.
I don't want to give it away, because we're going to get to it, and it ruins the whole movie.
I feel like I feel like it's a movie I haven't seen, and I know he's the bad guy in it.
Okay, I don't want to give it away then as well, because it'll ruin the whole movie. Like, it's the...
Well, that's not true, because Rick Deckard was kind of shitty.
Okay, but he's not... But he's the, I guess, the, an anti-hero, but, like, literally, like, a villain.
True.
Well, I guess we can debate that more when we get to that movie. So I wonder how different it would be for someone who knows nothing about this movie and has never seen it. So I felt a little tainted.
I didn't.
But you haven't seen it in a while, right?
No, I mean, I watched it, like, probably, like, last year.
Did you think there was suspense? Like, did you think that maybe he did it?
I was just like, I don't know who did it. I don't think he did it. And then as it went on, I was like, oh, the wife did it.
Oh, you figured that out.
I mean, it's easy. I'm yawning. I'm so bored with the movie.
Well, the thing about that was easy. The thing about that was, is that watching it now, knowing that she did it, she didn't, to me, didn't give like one hint, except for the fact that in the 90s, usually it was a psycho woman who did it, which we'll talk about it more, I guess, later. But she seemed more like a psychopath because she didn't seem to show any remorse for the entire movie. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, she gets a little emotional, and I was like, there were no hints to me. Like, she sees it on the news. She's talking to him about how, you know, they slept together. He's more emotional than she is.
Yeah, in that ending.
Yeah, which is interesting that, well, not the ending, but when she comes to talk to him about it, how she's like, you're still obsessed with her. And then he starts, like, sobbing. Apparently, that was supposed to be Bonnie Bedelia's scene, in a way, sort of the focus of it. And Harrison came in with all this emotion, and which happens a lot in movies where all of a sudden the coverage is only on one character, and it either means the other actor was probably really bad, so they had to keep the coverage on that one person, or the other actor just brought something that they weren't expecting in the scene. Yeah, so he's like, I was going to cut to Bonnie the whole time, and I just kept it on Harrison. I'm finding a theme, particularly in this movie and as we're going, is a lot of directors who are expecting him to be this sort of one-note movie star and then are surprised when they get a character actor, someone who's actually bringing something to it. And the director, Alan Pakula, actually said that he thinks that this was very personal for Harrison and he was bringing in what he had done to his family in the past. Now, that's what he said. And we know a lot more about, you know.
I'm just picturing Harrison Ford being framed for murder now. Like,
no, not murder. No, cheating on his wife.
Yeah, but now I'm just like backtracking and being like,
yes, framed. I'm sorry. Actually, this is something that no one knows, is that
Harrison Ford was framed
for murder.
Oh, boy, that's funny.
And The Fugitive is actually his true story.
Yes, he grew a beard.
He did.
We all know.
Speaking of beards and things like that, because that'll happen in The Fugitive, the studio was not happy with him shaving his head. Well, not shaving, getting a buzz cut. And they were really trepidatious about it.
Does he have one in this movie?
He has a bit of a buzz cut, yeah. It didn't seem as much of a buzz cut as they talk about it, because I read the research first and then saw it, and I was like, that doesn't seem that much. And in the flashbacks, I think his hair isn't as, like, buzz cut. But he wanted to play the character who was, I guess, didn't really care about vanity, which is another theme, because he said the same thing in Mosquito Coast and a lot of other movies. So
Harrison Ford doesn't care about vanity.
I think that's what it is, really. So they let him do it, but they weren't really too happy about it.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen his hair, is it Morning Glory that it's so buzzed that you're like, dude, grow your hair out a little bit?
Is it Morning Glory? I don't remember what his hair looks like
42.
In there.
No,
it's 42. Oh. Well, 42
he's playing. His hair is like...
Well, he's playing a real person in that.
I know, but his hair's... Oh, I hate it. I hate his hair in that movie.
Something interesting about this movie, which is based on a book, there was a bidding war for it in 1986, even though the book came out in 1987. This is something that a lot of publishers will do if they, like, think a book, like, could be a movie and has a lot... is going to be a big hit is they'll sort of send it around to movie studios. Mm-hmm. And it was. It was like one of the, it was his first book, but it was like a number one book at the time. It's by Scott Turow. He was a lawyer who became an author, which I'm sure we've seen before. And it was bought by Sidney Pollack, who would go on to direct Sabrina and Random Hearts. Mm-hmm. But he ended up handing it off to Alan Pakula, who did All the President's Men and Sophie's Choice. Have you not
seen Sophie's Choice? I've never seen Sophie's Choice.
Oh, it's so good.
But I thought for the longest time, and someone finally told me I was wrong this weekend.
What?
Was that Sophie's Choice was about a woman deciding whether or not to keep her baby. And they went, no. That's not Sophie's Choice at all.
Well, it's, if you think about it, it's almost like a game of telephone where it, in a way, it is about her deciding between her children, and I could see how that could become confusing.
No, like, I thought it was whether or not she should have an abortion or not.
No, I'm getting what you're saying, but I can see how that sort of went off the rails and got confused.
And then people were like, no, it's about, like, World War II, and...
It's a Holocaust movie.
And I went, okay. No.
Not what I thought.
Completely wrong, bitch.
That was the movie that I saw and went, oh, Meryl Streep is not overrated. She is freaking amazing.
Maybe we should sit down, Donald Trump, and just put on Sophie's Choice then.
I don't think he would be rooting for her in a Nazi movie. Just saying. I don't know. Just a hunch.
Yeah, I mean, we are punching Nazis.
Maybe that should be our new tagline. The Harrison Ford Podcast, punching Nazis.
All right.
Anyway.
Back to this movie. You guys can't tell. We don't want to talk.
Well, here's some really interesting stuff. So, in 1987, he said no to The Untouchables. Have you ever seen The Untouchables with Kevin Costner? This is an awesome movie. It's about Elliot Ness. Elliot Ness was an agent who went after, my God, I'm so tired. Why could I think of his name? Al Capone.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a really awesome movie. Oh, Sean Connery's in it.
You're putting at me like I'm like, yes, Sean Connery.
He also said no to Dick Tracy.
That makes sense. Warren Beatty did good.
Yeah. And Warren Beatty eventually took it over and directed it.
I don't know why. I was like, that makes sense. Warren Beatty.
And then a movie called Revolution with Al Pacino, which I've never seen. He said no to that.
That would
have. He said, I don't regret these choices that I didn't make that went on to the big success for someone else. The reason I don't take the job was that I didn't know how to do it, or it was too close to something I'd already done. I don't like the idea, if you can't do it, you can't do it. And there is no regretting it. Sounds very much like him.
Mm-hmm.
This movie he really thought about before he decided to do it, and some of his friends say that that's actually when you know he's going to say yes. If he says no right away, if he's actually like thinking about it, then he's probably like most likely going to do it. I guess that's, you know, what he's been doing.
You guys, he's been thinking about doing this podcast for a while. So.
Well, you know, the last episode we recorded, he was in New York.
I know.
He obviously got lost getting to the studio. We got to give him better directions.
The studio, okay. My apartment.
Oh, my God, shush. Don't tell people. Well, sometimes we have a studio.
Yes,
it's a studio in quotes.
Yeah, let's call him up, say you want to come to Brooklyn, hang out in a tiny apartment.
But he's always here, like, on Sundays when we record. Although this is not a Sunday today, but...
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a joke. I don't think that Harrison Ford was on his way here. And honestly, I really hope he doesn't ever listen to this show.
That'd be fun.
Yeah. So something else that's sort of interesting is that Harrison felt that the shoes were very important to the character. So he wore them in every scene. And that's sort of a big deal sometimes, too, because a lot of actors, when they're being shot from the waist up, will wear, like, slippers or, like, not wear, you know, the shoes. And he was like, no, he felt that it made him walk in a certain way. He felt the briefcase was clear. It was key. He followed the prosecutor's office in Detroit to kind of get a sense of, you know, what it was
so
like.
Weird.
That's what a lot of actors do. I think that's, you know, part of the process.
It is. I mean, I guess it's maybe just my
Well, every actor's
background.
Different. Listen, every actor's
that's
different.
That's why I'm like, you're so weird. Like, I gotta wear certain shoes.
Oh, the shoes thing.
Yeah. Not like going
that's a little bit rarer, I think, between actors. But I mean, doing research and like sitting with prosecutors and getting
that.
A sense.
I'm definitely talking about the shoe thing.
But I can see what he's saying. That like, I mean, there's the famous thing that... Tarkin, the original Tarkin, not the CGI Tarkin, from Star Wars, was he would never wear the boots because they were uncomfortable. So he's never wearing them.
Good. Maybe, actually, no, not good. Not good because, okay, here is my thing.
Go for it.
Carrie Fisher couldn't wear a bra.
Oh, that's different.
That bro was like, these shoes are uncomfortable.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
So important to George Lucas.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
About what everyone was looking like.
Well, I mean, I'm sure it had to do with the fact that they were both at
Peter,
different stages.
What's his name? Peter what?
Peter Cushing.
Yes.
That they were at different stages of their life. I mean, even Carrie was like, I was so like in awe of Peter Cushing. Like he was such a huge star at the time.
Okay, still.
The whole thing is ridiculous. Like, this is not really in space. And I think she could wear a bra.
Yeah, she could have.
Yeah. It's ridiculous.
I hope she wore one in The Force Awakens or out of spite didn't. It was like, no one's allowed to wear one, guys. It's space.
Oh, you might like this. So Frank Pearson, who wrote this movie, also wrote A Star Is Born with Barbra Streisand.
Barbra, I get in so many fights about that movie. Because that's my favorite A Star Is Born.
Yeah.
And many people fight me because they're like, Judy Garland.
Oh, and they think that's better. That's not fair. I think that they're different movies. Like,
because The Star Is Born is her and Brolin,
Chris
Christopherson. She's married to a Brolin.
She is.
Chris Christopherson, that's right. Because my dad and I used to watch it as a kid.
I've actually never seen it.
They have like a baby and shit. I haven't seen it since I was a kid. Okay. So I could be completely wrong, but I'm like,
it's definitely Chris Christopherson.
They fall in love, they have a kid, she sings, it's Barbara.
Yeah, they're going to redo it with, I think, Beyonce and Bradley Cooper.
Guys, here's my plea. Because I don't want to talk about this movie, we're going to take a break. I'm going to plead to you all.
But we still have to talk about the sex scene. We cannot sex scene. Okay.
We're on goal to have my plea and then talk about the sex scene.
Okay,
Yeah. Okay. Here is my dilemma with all of the fucking remakes. I had to sit through Beaches, the not real Lifetime original movie.
I refused to see it.
That it was called a Lifetime original movie.
Well,
it was remake. It's just Lifetime did it. You could do Lifetime's Beaches, not Lifetime's original movie. It's not original.
Oh, I see what you're saying. You have an issue with the original part.
Yes. I have an issue with the whole thing. But that started me. Then you get Idina Menzel, and you're trying to pitch her as the new Bette Midler. Excuse me.
I think that's unfair. I don't think they were trying to pitch her as the new Bette Midler. She's the new Cece.
She's not. She was bad.
You're talking to me about Bette Midler?
No, I'm just saying she was bad. That movie was terrible. Beaches is one of my favorite movies. And here's the thing. You should not come out of Beaches with dry eyes.
That's true.
I almost slightly cried. That's it. And that's never in my life have I watched Beaches and not cried. Even as a kid, I was like, this is sad.
I got a good segue to that, though.
What, from Beaches?
Do you know who in this movie is also in Beaches?
No.
I'm going to say this wrong, of course. Grafazi, who played Tommy Minota. I can't speak. Malota? What is that?
Where?
They said his name a million times in the movie.
Tommy Malota?
I think so, yeah. Anyway, because I can't remember anything. He was in Beaches. He was Otto Titzling.
Who's that guy?
Otto Titzling, Adventure, and Crouch have nothing to get very worked up about. He was also in Big Business. He's the one that she punches. He's the guy at the front desk who thinks that Bette Midler is in love with him. One of the Bette Midlers, because there's two of them. I love Big Business so much. I walked past the plaza. Every time I walk past, all I think about is Beaches, and I sing the song from the end. Because I love Bette Midler.
A Wind Beneath My Wings?
No, the end. That's Beaches.
You said Beaches.
No,
you
said Big Business.
You said Beaches.
I did not. I said,
I will. It is on audio. You said Beaches. So it is not my fault that I said
this. I said Big Business.
Guys, when she listens back to this, I swear to God, she's going to probably try and edit it out and make it sound like she said Big Business.
I'm not editing this week. You are, so.
Great. I'm going to play it repeatedly that she said Beaches.
Every time I walk past, all I think about is Beaches, and I sing the song from the end. All I think about is Beaches, and
she said Beaches.
Okay, well, Beaches, and then Big Business.
There you go.
He is the guy. He's Otto Titzling in Beaches, and then in Big Business, he's the guy behind the counter who's in love with one of the Bette Midlers.
Yeah, no, that's fine. That was all said correctly. The plaza part was when you said,
every time I walk past, all I think about is beaches and I sing the song from the end.
And I went, so when my wing, you went, no, that's beaches. Like, it's what you said.
It's higher love. At the end of Big Business, when they all come out, of the outside of the plaza, and they in their couples, and they get in the cars, and it's such a romantic comedy, 80s cliche, whatever. I love Big Business.
Anyway,
so I was really excited about that. Yes, yeah, so the sex scene. So apparently, Harrison
did he have sex with the girl on camera?
No, he did not.
Come on,
no. It's pretty close, though. He choreographed it, according to reports. Now, here's the thing. Can I tell you what I do like about this sex scene?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it has to do with plot, because it has to be that graphic to show how, like, sexually passionate he is about her. It's an adult sex scene, and I feel like it's the kind of sex scenes that you don't see today anymore, where, like, nobody touches each other. It was realistic.
What? Yeah. I was gonna fight because I keep watching random parts of Itu Mama Tambien, and I'm like, nah, that movie. Nope, you're wrong there. There's still modern day sex scenes. But yes, you're right.
I mean, I don't see that many movies with sex scenes in them, to be honest, as much as I try. it just, I was like, oh yeah, I feel like we don't really do this anymore. In movies, we're a little bit too precious.
Yeah, it's normally like to a Nora Jones song, like fake rolling around is what sex scenes are now. It's like, oh, cool. They just were like, it was like, come away with me in the night. Like
what rolling around. What I do find hilarious, though, is that in the poster, they use that scene, but they like photoshopped a dress on her.
Yeah.
I was like, wait a second. And also, I watched the trailer. And that scene is in the trailer. Like, I don't remember also nudity being in trailers. I feel like they've... Unless it's like a Red
Guys,
Band trailer.
It's... what year was this made?
Came out in 1990.
Okay, nope. So that was Bush era. I was going to say it's the Clinton era, but it's not. It's Bush.
Oh, yeah, it is.
First Bush.
Oh, it took me a second. I was like, wait.
First Bush. Daddy Bush. Not second Bush. 90. Daddy Bush. Oh, God.
Later in the 90s, we're going to get into the Clintons. But but that surprised me.
Political podcast, guys. We're getting into the Clintons.
Except I keep singing the George Michael song, Freedom 90. Because I'm like, 1990. Freedom.
Oh, boy.
Okay, let's not talk about that. But sort of what I think is interesting about this film as well is that it's sort of kind of the first of these sort of sexual thrillers of the 1990s, like Basic Instinct,
Fatal Attraction,
where you have at the center this sort of, you know, manipulative woman.
Because the 90s loved to villainize us. But this is 2017. Yeah.
But this is almost like sort of the precursor. Like, it's almost like, you know, sexual thriller et. Like, it's like a little tiny, like, cracker or, like, a sorbet before it. It feels a little bit more 80s because it's so much more procedural.
There's, yeah.
You know, and they even said that there wasn't as much sex and blood in it as they thought they wanted to, but it feels like sort of the opening of the door to this. It just sort of killed me watching it to be like, okay, Bonnie Bedelia et comes across as this sort of psycho. Okay, well, that's an interesting sort of twist, but, like, the way that they talk about the woman who dies. Oh, what is her name? What's her character name? Give me a second.
I could tell you zero people's character name.
Caroline Palomas. Excuse me.
What is Harrison Ford's name?
His name is Rusty.
Okay, that's how much I care. What's his name? Rusty. Okay. And you think I remember Rusty?
It's weird. And it is like short for something really like odd. Funny enough, it's short for Rosette or something, which I don't remember anyone ever mentioning that in the movie. It must be from the book. But everyone just calls him Rusty. It's just sort of an interesting thing that I didn't realize this movie sort of, you know, opened the door for these movies where men feel emasculated by these women. Because they keep talking about, and even show, that she seems to be sleeping her way to the top and that she drops him as soon as she finds that he has no ambition. Although I didn't feel like he was that obsessed with her. Everyone keeps saying, you're just not over your obsession with her. And I was like, I mean, I guess. I don't really
know.
See that.
I
But something I found before we move on is that Linda Holmes from Pop Culture Happy Hour and NPR, she apparently has this thing she calls the Bonnie Bedelia rule, which is because Bonnie Bedelia is a name actor, and she has such a small part at the beginning that she guessed that she did it. Kind of like on Law and Order when you're like, oh, the famous person did it.
Yeah.
So that was sort of brilliant. Just like, oh, yeah. But when I saw it when I was a kid, I didn't get that Bonnie Bedelia was, like, this big star.
Well, I mean, yeah, it makes sense. Because, it, no, it's like, but if you're one of the, like, top-billed actors in something, too. Because isn't she one of the top-billed ones?
You know what? She probably is.
Yeah. Like, if you're a top-billed actor, but you, like, have a smaller part, it's like, oh, you did something. You fucked up in this movie.
Yeah, I mean... But there's also the sort of a... Harrison is also getting to this point where he's paired with these really amazing character actresses who their entire career tends to be just sort of being in a movie with a more famous man.
Yeah.
Bonnie Bedelia, Celia Ward in The Fugitive. We're going to go up to Ann Archer in the Jack Ryan movies. Like this sort of like stalwart kind of actress.
I forgot we're going to have to watch Jack Ryan.
Are you excited or unexcited about that?
I don't know how I feel about that.
Oh, also, John Williams did the music.
I wonder if he watched this movie.
Yeah, apparently he hasn't seen Star Wars, right?
Nope. He's seen parts. I'm like, John.
There's a lot of really surprise. Also, I was saying it's just a great cast. I mean, Raul Julia is just like, I love Raul Julia. He unfortunately died in 1994. And I thought he died of cancer when I was a kid. And I looked it up, and he had a stroke. This is awful.
I'm sorry. I'm back. I'm going back to, like, the fact that you as a child was like, well, I thought he died of cancer. And then I remembered he died of cancer, but he died of a stroke.
Do you know why I remember all this? Because I had an acting teacher. I was really lucky when I was younger in school. We had someone who had been on Broadway, and she moved back to the suburbs, and she taught, like, a real acting class. And she was in 9 on Broadway with Raul Julia. So I remember being in the car before class, like, my mother picked me up and we would turn on the news, and that's how I found out most people die, was listening to the radio, and they said that he passed away, and then we all went to class and we had to tell her, because she didn't know.
I'm just like, she was, because, like, I remember when Frank Sinatra died, because that was, like, when my grandpa, like, sat me down and, like, made me listen to Frank Sinatra.
Uh-huh.
So that was, like, 2 or 3. And he, like, and from then on I was obsessed. Like, I had a poster of Frank Sinatra on my wall. I could not tell you what Frank Sinatra died of.
Like, probably old age and drinking. I mean, no, not drinking. I'm just kidding. But
I don't
he was
remember.
Older.
It was my thing. I was like, and Audrey, I couldn't have told you what Audrey died of until I got older. And like now I'm like, oh, she died of liver cancer. But it's because
I loved
Raul
Julia. I was a
but
really
it's just
big
so
fan
funny
of.
Funny that you like Adam as a kid. He died of cancer. Like I just think it's funny.
I don't know why I thought that.
It's just funny because like most kids are like, oh, they died. And then as you get older, you're like, oh, I looked it up and they had died of this. But
well,
kid.
The Addams Family also like had just come out, and like
who was
I
in the
Addams
Family?
He was Gomez.
Okay, well, I don't know who this man is.
You don't know who Raul Julia was?
Uh-uh.
Well, that's so sad.
I'm sure if I saw him, maybe, but I don't.
He
know,
was
like,
the he was the main lawyer. He was Sandy. He was Sandy Stern, the guy
okay.
who defended
then
him.
And I probably yeah. know who he is.
Very attractive Latin man.
oh wait, that's a good segue.
To what?
I'm talking about more attractive Latin men.
Okay, all right, but can I just say 2 things that I think are really cool? So yeah. Jesse Bradford...
By Latin, I mean Latino, because he's not... Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm probably saying the words wrong. I'm sorry.
Well, I know. I don't know. But yes, continue.
So Jesse Bradford, who also was on The West Wing, plays his son and was in one of my favorite movies, My Blue Heaven. He played Ryan Pierce in The West Wing. He was in Swim Fan. And the little kid... There's a little redheaded kid who they're trying to, you know, get away from his mom who abused him. That's Joseph Manganiello, and he was the kid in Jurassic Park, the original, Tim, the little redhead kid. And I'm looking at these kids, and I'm like, why are you guys familiar? I know your faces, and I had to look them up. Christine Eberstock, who was in Mrs. Huber in the first season of Desperate Housewives. She was in Mad Men. She's Mrs. Davis in Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
She's who?
She's Mrs. Davis, her roommate who was her next-door neighbor's mother.
Oh.
Yeah.
Heather's mom.
Heather's mom, yeah. And I saw her on Broadway, I'm pretty sure, in a bunch of stuff. And she must have a bigger part in the book because she's in a wheelchair for no reason. And then you see her, like, she's, like, 5 lines. And I was like, she must have had a bigger part in the book. And
probably.
The wheelchair is something big. Anna Maria Hosford, who, when I was a kid, I was obsessed with a show called Amen with Sherman Hemsley, and she was his daughter, and that was one of my first ships. She does a ton of sitcoms. Paul Winfield, who plays the judge, was in, like, a million things when I was a kid. Picket Fences. He's in The Wrath of Khan. He was in Next Generation, Babylon 5, The Terminator. Greta Scacchi, obviously, you know, went on to do a lot of things. She turned down Basic Instinct, oddly enough.
And they went to Sharon Stone.
It did. She had issues, apparently, with... she felt that the lesbian scenes were not there for any reason except to gratify men.
She's probably not wrong.
No, not so much.
But going back to Latino men.
Yes, so... Why would you... Are we segueing to Latino men, Rachel?
Because of Diego Luna. Actually, all of Rogue One. But
yeah, so we didn't get to talk about Rogue One because obviously some things happened. You just saw it again.
Yes, I saw it Monday night. Because the first time I ever saw it was right... Like, our Christmas parties always hit the worst time of year because it's always the Friday a Star Wars movie comes out. And I'm one of those people that are like, I have to go. Because I intern at UCB on Thursday nights, so I never can go to midnight premieres unless I, like, take off far enough in advance.
Mm-hmm.
So that Friday, I was like, okay, I need to go. I need to see Rogue One. And so I scheduled it. I bought a ticket for, like, the 8-something, like, the later showing, I think. Like, I went, so it was like, okay.
What did you think of it?
Well, wait, hold on. I got to set it up. And so I was going by myself, having been drinking from 1 o'clock in the afternoon until going to the movie. And then my friend, my, like, coworker and I, she was like, well, I don't want to go home. Like, I was like, well, come see Rogue One. So me, my drunk coworker, and then my other drunk coworker, they both bought tickets, and we all went to see Rogue One. And it was the funniest interaction, because my one coworker, his whole family's from Mexico, he was, like, so, like, happy to see Diego Luna and, like, have Diego Luna have his Mexican accent. Like, he was just, like,
a lot
super
of people
into
were,
it.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, he was like, oh, my God, this is awesome. And then their coworker has never seen a Star Wars in her life.
Oh, that's interesting.
Was sitting beside me. Well, I told her, I was like, it's fine. Like, you don't need to see it for Rogue One. But she was sitting beside me, and the movie starts. Diego Luna walks on the screen. She goes, is that Diego Luna? And I was like, yeah, how do you know who he is? She goes, oh my God, Dirty Dancing, Havana Nights was my shit. And, like, got super into the movie because of Diego Luna from Dirty Dancing, Havana Nights. And I, like, oh, it was just funny. But I, honest to God, do not remember, like,
anything?
Did not remember a good majority of that movie.
Okay, so the segment's done.
No, until I saw it again on Monday.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Like, I thought Tarkin was in it for, like, a hot second, and then I watched it on Monday.
He's got a big
so
part. That was surprising.
Well,
that's a good segue. So what do you think of the whole CGI characters? Let's start with Tarkin.
I didn't hate it as much as other people.
I thought that Tarkin was better, and I wonder if it's because he was in shadow more, but it seemed more believable
but
to me.
It was also because he had wrinkles. And it wasn't, like, they made her face, like, porcelain looking. Because they were, like, no blemishes at all. And so she didn't look human.
She didn't. She looks like a cartoon character. And it took me out of the movie completely. And I really wish that they had maybe done, like, the side of her face or, like, a shadow or something. And I feel like years from now they'll just go in and fix it, probably.
It's just, she needed a blemish. We're people. Like, we have blemishes. And she didn't. And it's even, like, yeah, Carrie Fisher doesn't didn't have a mole or a blemish on her face. Mm-hmm. But it's like,
character.
Still,
there's some character,
the, like,
yeah.
You can see lines and stuff. And she was just, like, so smooth. And I think why Tarkin kind of worked a little bit more was because he had wrinkles and they kept them. So he looked more human than she did because she looked, like, perfect.
Yeah, but also I think she was in the light and he was more in shadow. And props to Guy Henry, who played him under that with, you know, no visual recognition.
Yeah,
like, that's pretty cool.
The girl who played Leia was cool too.
Yeah, I don't have her name right now because she was in it for like 2 seconds. I was fell in love, not that I have not always fallen in love with, but I just love Alan Tudyk.
Yeah, he played the longest time thought he was British.
Oh no, he's definitely American.
Dodgeball. Because of
that's what sort of
all the movies.
That's what sort of
because of Dodgeball.
I actually love that movie. He's
same,
great in it.
But like, I didn't think of Dodgeball.
He's so good in that movie that I didn't realize it was him until the credits.
With the pirate?
Yeah. And I'm like, wait, Alan Tudyk is in this movie? Like he's kind. He's just one of those actors who is so amazing. I mean, obviously he was wearing a CGI suit, and you can't see that it's him. But like he's so good at characters that he really, falls.
I'm so excited for him as Sid Wayne, was his name, in Powerless. He's Bruce Wayne's cousin in Powerless.
Oh, the TV series. Yeah.
And it's like, it's going to be great.
But as a movie, what did you think of the movie?
I really liked it. I loved it. I mean, I have a tattoo for Rogue One.
Tell everyone about your tattoo.
Okay, so I have terrible, terrible anxiety, clearly. I always think I'm dying. I always think something's wrong. I think every time I go somewhere, something's going to happen. So I didn't want, I wanted to go to the Women's March, but I knew I physically couldn't do it. If I went, that's why I don't like planes. If I can't escape easily, if I can't get myself out of somewhere easily, I get so anxious that it drives, I'm stressed out now thinking about Trump that I have literally, I break out everywhere. It's terrible. And I knew if I went to the Women's March, I would lose my mind. And I explained this to my friend who
went.
There's
a lot of people.
She was like, you did get stuck in places where it's like, you basically were just stuck there.
Yeah, you had to wait until you got to a street where there was an opening.
Yeah, and I am so short, I can't see anyway. Most times I'm in crowds.
No,
I
had
see.
Two friends of mine who just, they were like, it's going to be too many people. And I really wish that I could go, but my anxiety will be too much. And I thought we were going to move faster than we did.
Yeah. Everyone kind of did.
Yeah. After 4 hours, we had not gone that far. But I'm still really glad that I went. But I understand why you
did. I did wish I could go. But so what me and my friend did was I, for a while, have wanted a Star Wars tattoo and wasn't sure what I wanted. Me and my best friend went matching one, so I was like, well, I can't get the one we want, but I do want something now.
Yeah.
And so in the trailer for Rogue One, it's not in the movie, but in the trailer, Jyn Erso says, well, this is a rebellion, isn't it? Well, I rebel. And so it's a weird thing. It's like a personal me thing. But I remember as a kid, anytime we would have Holocaust survivors or people who came from war-torn countries or all these things, or not war-torn countries, big historical events that are now viewed as negative. When people would come to talk to us about it, I never understood how it could happen. Mm-hmm. And that was always the question I wanted to ask how would you let this happen? And I know with the Holocaust, it's different because they were going to shoot us, but so go not so much the survivors, but the German people, how did you just let this happen? I know, he would have killed you, but also fight back. Why did everyone just kind of succumb to this man? And so I thought about Trump and his presidency and how everyone is reacting to that. And because I couldn't march, I said, I don't want, when I get older, for kids to ask me, how did you let this happen?
Yeah.
So I got the Star Wars tattoo I wanted. So I got I Rebel, so that when I'm older, if someone asks how I felt, I literally can point at my arm and be like, I got this.
That's a really cool reason. I'm really glad that you talked about that. And it's funny because it is cut from the movie and it is in the trailer, or maybe it was just filmed for the trailer. Well, but you're not the only one that I know who has that tattoo.
No, a lot of people are getting it.
Yeah, which I think is great.
Yeah, I liked it. And I don't have any where you can see them because I'm an actor.
Yeah.
And I mean, it doesn't matter in this day and age. Everyone has them.
Yeah, but But you'd spend longer in makeup to get rid of it. So it's good to have in a place where you don't have to spend 3 hours in makeup.
This one is small enough that they could cover it easily. But I wanted, of all the ones to be seen, I was like, this is a good one.
Yeah, we'll put a picture. Although it's already on our Instagram and things like that. We've done it.
I was very happy to see all the Carries. I kept getting tweeted them all. All the Carrie pictures from the
March. Yeah.
If I did go, mine would have probably been something Carrie.
Well, since
we are talking about it, I would like to talk about this. I wasn't prepared to talk about it. This quote that Todd Fisher said regarding, if people don't realize what we're talking about, is that a lot of people brought, which I had some pictures of that I put on the Twitter and on the Instagram, pictures of Carrie as Princess Leia, in the sense
and
of...
some were just Carrie. Some had Carrie's tweets and stuff, too.
That was great. Some had... Carrie's tweets. A couple of them literally said, Carrie Fisher sent me, which was really awesome. But a lot of them had pictures of her as Leia, about being in the resistance. And so this is what Todd Fisher wrote, if I get the right quote, because again, I thought we were going to talk about it next week. The march in Washington to me had a different meaning than it did to most. For me, it meant carrying on Carrie's mission. She was a champion for women. No one can deny it. And then this thing that really sort of took my breath away, was it in this article? It might not be in this article, but someone said, you know, heart disease may have taken her, but she has become stronger than anyone could imagine. So they were quoting Star Wars, and it just sort of took my breath away. I was like, oh, what a really great way, you know. So we'll put a lot of that on the
and
show
notes.
And
we'll talk more about it later. I just wanted
my tattoo. We're actually going to have Craig Bierick go on to talk about his friendship with Carrie. So we'll be talking about her a lot throughout the rest of the year. If anyone doesn't know Craig, he's an amazing actor, really funny. They were really good friends. He's on Unreal, which is a wonderful show.
He just, not he. I was not going to talk about him at all. And I said, he's a great guy, but I was talking about
talking about someone else.
I was talking about Carrie Fisher, and I said, I went to say she, and I said he. Anywho, I'm just, is what I was trying to say.
We'll just cut all this out.
No,
we'll just cut all this out.
That's my work. I'm just glad, like, there's like three tweets of mine right now that are all Carrie Fisher based that are like super popular. And I'm like, thank you. This is the life I want now. I want to just be the girl who is campaigning to be the remembrance of Carrie Fisher squad. Like, it's me being like, don't forget this, like every 5 minutes.
No, I think we can be sure that people will not forget her. There's this really amazing picture. I think it's through the AP or Reuters, anyway, where it's a sign of history has
his eyes on you, and Carrie Fisher just watching.
But it's two different things, which is amazing. So the photographer got the line from Hamilton, history has its eyes on you, and then behind them happens to be one of the many Princess Leia posters, and all you see are the eyes. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, wow, like as a picture in general, but just like this sort of presence of Carrie and, you know, what she stood for. It's really sort of an amazing thing. So we also didn't get to talk about the trailer for the new Blade Runner movie, or the teaser.
Are we done with Rogue?
You want to keep talking about it?
Yes,
we can talk about Rogue, yeah.
I just looked at my list, and we haven't touched on Diego, really. We haven't touched on Donnie Yen. Riz Ahmed.
Donnie Yen is one of...
Jimmy Smith.
Can I quickly... Oh, my God.
Ben Mendelsohn.
Can I quickly just talk about my thought about the film?
What's his name on here?
Who?
Oh, my God, I can't remember his name. The guy who plays Baz.
Oh, my God, do I not?
No.
Oh, no. Look up...
Oh, he's right there. I'm blind. It's when
I do my work.
Yep,
okay,
I got it. It's right there.
But I just want to say real quickly what I thought of the film. So I really loved it. I had a lot of fun. I think I'm not going to have the same emotional attachment to it as I am about the trilogy movies, because I already have emotional attachment to the characters, and that seems to be more character based, where this is more sort of adventure based.
Oh, I disagree.
Okay, no. Well, that's why the show is exciting.
It's probably my second or third favorite Star Wars.
The fight scenes were amazing.
No, it's not that. I love the characters. I love these characters so much more than I love, especially like the prequels.
No, well, I'm not even talking about the prequels because they don't exist to me.
Okay, well, I'm saying like, I love...
I mean, they exist, but I'm saying that I just
I love
never
all
seen
Star Wars
them.
Characters. I think they're all very interesting in the way they're written and like their plot... like how they fit in the plot and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But I just really, really, really like these characters. Because it's just like the way they were written and their like ideals and everything about them, I just really love. Like with Cassian, like his character arc in one movie is insane. I love it. Like he goes from being like a stone cold spy who will just murder somebody mm-hmm. to like help himself to somebody who literally like cares for all these people and is upset and like wants to help the rebel. Like his whole life has been the rebellion and he's kind of jaded by it to like turn into this guy who's like, I'm dying where I want to. Sorry, spoiler alert. Dying.
Oh, well,
we're
obviously
going to
have spoilers when we talk about it. Yeah.
In the arms of someone who like I fought alongside. And like the minute he didn't instantly shoot Galen, I was like, this is like his character arc is so
cool. I have to confess,
cool.
though, is that I think I loved it a little bit less, even though, again, I really enjoyed it. The characters and the actors were the best part. The action, I was literally like out loud going, oh, which was, it was a SAG screening, or no, I'm sorry, a BAFTA screening, and so my friend and I were the only ones who were allowed, with, like, very obvious. But was, I was talking about it with a very successful screenwriting friend of mine, and he was, like, asking me a bunch of questions, like, well, why did Cassian want to help her? And I was like, oh, because he liked her. Well, why did he like her? And I was like, oh, well, I guess that really wasn't exactly set. So I felt like, even while I was watching it, that a lot of the sort of character or information or exposition was sort of went about really quickly to get to the next piece of action. But it's a popcorn movie, and in that sense, I loved it. But I'm going to be, in a way, more sort of emotionally attached to The Force Awakens for just, and maybe just for childhood reasons or nostalgia reasons, I don't know. But it was so much fun. And I'm so glad that they committed to the fact that they all died at the end, because they could have kept them alive.
Listen, I am reading fan fiction where people are fixing that.
Of course they are.
Fine.
And that's what fan fiction is for. It's fan fiction is fantasy, and you should be able to do whatever you want if it makes you happy. But if they were alive, it wouldn't make sense to me. Going in, I knew that they were going to die, because otherwise, well, where are they? There's no reason why no one mentions them. They would not run
Cassian
away.
Cassian might be in the Han Solo movie, and I'm totally about it.
That would make sense, but it's also before this.
Yes. I just want a whole series of just Cassian. But here's my defense.
Go for it.
For the screenwriter.
Well, I feel like I could tell they made a lot of changes.
It's not, no. Here's why he ended up not killing Galen and why he ended up liking Jyn.
Mm-hmm.
He was going to still kill Galen even after they go back to Yavin 4,
mm-hmm.
when they're going to Emu, Yamu, or whatever, the planet they Indu, the one that Galen dies on. Before they get there.
Planet nerds are crying right now.
I think it's Edu.
I don't know.
It's Edu, I think.
I'm just joshing you.
So, Edu, whatever. The hope and the trust that I think it's Shiroot is how you say it, and Baze, mm-hmm. and Bodhi, and all these people have in, like, believing her and what she's saying, and especially, and I think it's the Force that does it, because Shiroot says it's the Force.
That's
like,
a good point.
He trusts the Force, and he's like, no. Like, he's like, I believe her story. Like, I believe what she's saying. I think that's what kind of leads him into not, you know, like, not killing Galen. Is because he starts to trust all those people. And that's why at the end he falls and, like, you can clearly him and Jyn. Okay, I was, like, totally down for the Jyn and Cassian being raised parents storyline. But, you know. And everyone died.
I don't know. When Lucasfilms comes out and actually says no, you know it's not a thing.
No, but I mean, like, I'm sure they would say that about, like, any spoiler like that.
Well, usually they don't comment, because if they comment, then... Like, here's something as well, is that after Carrie Fisher passed away, there was this rumor that came out that they were going to recreate her again, CGI, like they did in the movie. And they came out and were like, well, we don't usually comment on this. And even Mark Hamill was talking about how spoilers for The Force Awakens were online. He was like, guys, you got to do something. And they were like, no, but if we say something, then we confirm it.
Yeah.
If we, you know, yes or
Han,
no.
Han getting killed, everyone
He said he read the, like, a couple months before the movie came out, he read the first 15 minutes, and then right before it came out, he said he read the whole thing, and he was like, this is the movie!
My family's like, guys!
And they're like, we can't say anything.
I mean, they're not wrong. But also, like...
But anyway, I'm saying they came out to say, we are not going to recreate Carrie Fisher, and we don't usually comment, but we're telling you now that we're not.
Yeah, I just wanted it to be Cassian and Jyn together. That's why I read Rebel Captain fan fiction.
People were shipping them before the movie even came out.
Yeah, because everyone knew. I saw those sex eyes Cassian was giving her. She literally was like, I rebel. And he's like standing all moodily in a corner.
I do wonder if that was part of the reshoots. I really am curious to know what. Them and the... Well, there was a big change, though, because originally, which you can see in the trailer, they run with the disc across the big sort of like thing.
Here's what happened. I'm telling you.
Okay.
So what they did was they would just send the dailies. So they filmed a bunch of stuff. I think with this movie especially, they were like, we have to see how people are going to react to stuff, and then that'll kind of evolve into what the storyline is going to end up being.
No, but there was a big deal about the reshoots
did. Yeah, there was a big deal about the reshoots.
The tone was too dark, they said. They wanted to make it less dark.
But all of the trailer stuff, like most of the trailer stuff, people were like, that's not in the movie. It was because Gareth Edwards would send the dailies to like the trailer people because they would try and make trailers. And then after they went through and cut a bunch of stuff, they showed him a trailer and he's like, in the movie anymore.
Oh, well, that happens all
and
the
so,
time,
no,
though.
No, and that's why, like, that, most the trailer are, like, because they were like, oh, well, we'll change it to, like, so, like, the Ira Bell line was when she quoted Cassian back to everybody. So, like, when she's standing there and mm-hmm. she says, like, rebellions are built on hope, which is what Cassian says to her.
Yeah.
It, like, it, that was
but
where the
originally,
Ira Bell
originally, the movie started with just that scene, so I'm sure they reworked some of it, because before that, it's you know how it starts with like her in jail, like
yeah.
they sort of added that stuff. It's really interesting. I'll link some of the stuff that they change, you know, but that happens all the time, particularly with movies that are so anticipated
yeah.
where they want a trailer. They want a trailer. I mean, there's a lot of scenes in The Force Awakens in the trailer that are not in the movie.
No.
Yeah. So that's, I think that happens.
Now going into trailers.
Speaking of trailers.
Really quickly, we're going to talk about the Blade Runner trailer.
Blade Runner 2049.
It's not really a trailer.
It's a teaser.
Like, yeah.
It's a teaser, and it, can I just say, it's none of it surprised me. I knew that it was going to be Ryan Gosling, and then at the very end, Harrison Ford was going to sort of emerge, and that was
with a
be the
gun.
Trailer. Somehow, it was like that.
What was it like? I used to have your job.
And it was wearing like, his own clothes.
Yeah, because
Harrison Ford is now to the point where he just shows up to set and goes, "I'm not changing. This is what you got."
I just like that Ryan Gosling is probably like, oh, what am I getting? But he could, because he went from like Russell Crowe. It's like he just keeps getting in movies with older actors who just don't really like, they care, but not like, they're like, I'm going to wear my own clothes. I'm going to do this. And then Ryan Gosling is like, hey guys.
Well, for a long time, apparently, Harrison Ford always says that he gets to pick out his own wardrobe. That's part of his contract now. But he particularly said that he loves watches. So he always picks out a watch for his character, and then
so
he keeps
why
it.
Rick Deckard don't need a watch?
Well, it's a different.
You don't need a watch.
I'm talking about contemporary movies, I'm sure. But that's he has
I'm
a nice watch collection.
I'm sure he had one on when he like was pointing a gun.
Well, again, he loves watches, and that shirt it seems to be his. And what I did particularly like was the aesthetic, sort of the visuals that they set up. Like it's remnants. It seems very, like, you know, reminding you of, like, the old movie, but it still feels a little bit different. It's a lot of more, like, you know, ancient stuff.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting.
I think it is. I actually was like, oh, this makes me excited about it. But it made me laugh hysterically that he's wearing his own clothes in the trailer.
Before we close out, very quickly, guys, I just want to...
Can we talk
trailer,
about...
The trailer, or the title.
Oh, the title. I won't, yeah.
The eighth Star Wars is The Last Jedi.
Which I love.
But it's also plural.
Yes, so it's plural or it's not plural. So that's what makes it really interesting and ambiguous.
And people are going crazy.
They are. They are going crazy about it. I love titles that have more than one meaning. Particularly things that also are simple and have more than one meaning.
Well, and they're all, and it's a sentence. The Force Awakens, The Last Jedi.
Someone did say that, but we don't know yet because we don't know what the last one is. It may not be a sentence.
Well, whatever. It's a sentence right there. That's a sentence alone.
That's true. Itself. Yeah, The Force Awakens, The Last Jedi. It is. I found something really interesting that Mark Hamill actually said about the title. He says, I think it's very ambiguous. Is The Last Jedi Leia? Is it me? Is it someone we've never met before? Is it Rey? Because she seems to have the Force as well. So we'll all wait and see. And I hadn't thought about Leia.
It's Cassian. He's fine. He emerges.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Perfectly young.
They're all fine.
That would be the saddest thing ever, though, is, like, if you see the Force Ghost and it's, like, Donnie Yen. If it's Donnie Yen's character, like, in the Force, I'd be like,
I feel
yes.
like they won't, though, because it's just
he
like...
He would have been a Jedi. I'm pissed.
Yeah, but that's a connection. You can't assume that everyone's seen Rogue One.
Hey, guys, if you like Star Wars, you should see every Star Wars. You should see all the Star Wars.
I agree with you, but I'm saying from a narrative point of view. Just like you can't have certain things from the books, because they did say they might take some certain things from the books without an explanation first. Or from the books that are, you know, the canon books that they're making, like Catalyst or Bloodline, that sort of, you know, branch out the story. You can't... not, for people who don't do that kind of stuff, they can't see the movie and go, well, if I didn't read that, I don't get it. You have to be able to know it as a single entity from a creative point of view. Just like you should make a movie not assuming people saw the trailer.
It's dumb. I don't get it.
But so I like the title. I'm very excited about it and the meaning of it. But right before we go, I should probably talk about that Presumed Innocent from 1990 was the 12th highest grossing film of that year.
Why is beyond me?
Well, I think Harrison Ford. I think the fact that the book was a huge bestseller, like even my mother went, oh yeah, I think I read that. The Los Angeles Times, Peter Travers, said that the film was smart, passionate, steadily engrossing thriller. Variety said Ford is a very mature, subtle, low-key performance, pulls off the difficult feat of making it impossible to be sure. And I'm going to throw this card across the room like David Letterman.
Pretend you did that.
Okay, I did it.
It's like, don't actually pretend.
I like David Letterman, and I want to be like him. I'm also happy that I'm like, we're done with this research. I can throw it out, and we can move on. Although we're probably not going to be doing Regarding Henry next. We're probably going to be doing this really awesome geek girl panel where we're going to talk about different fandoms. We're going to talk about Harrison. So that might be next in 2 weeks. Also, you still have time to donate to us and get the commentary for the holiday Star Wars episode.
Woo!
So 99 cents or more on the site. The money will go towards the podcast, sending people their prizes. Is really obviously very helpful. It's a donation, so it's probably tax deductible. Please review us on iTunes if you like the show. Reviews help us get seen by more people on iTunes. It sort of does this like algorithm thing. Recommend the show to one person if you've already given us a review that you think would like the show.
Yep. Like, rate, review, subscribe, all that.
Exactly. We have a contest, obviously. We have contests on the social media, as well as listening contests.
Yes.
We need to give away the spring gift.
Now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because we didn't before. I mean, the fall gift, excuse me.
Okay.
So, Indy Croft on Twitter has won her choice between a Blade Runner poster or a Raiders of the Lost Ark poster based on her
name.
I think I know what she's going to get, which is an amazing vintage design. So it's not like an actual poster. It's an original design that makes it look like 1940s posters. They're so awesome. I don't have it with me right now, but it's rad posters on, and I'll put the link on
Twitter.
But it's on Etsy. And I don't know why I don't have the name. Oh, man, I didn't write it down. But I'm sure it says Retro Rad Posters. That's it. And they're hating me right now. You can follow me on Twitter, Lauren Milberger. You can follow us, the whole podcast, at the Fordcast PC. Everywhere else, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, we are the Fordcast Podcast. Mm-hmm. And we do prizes all over, so follow us everywhere. I think that's our website.
Please look us up. The Fordcast Podcast, right?
.com, yeah.
And I'm Rachel Leishman on Twitter. And yeah.
So thanks for joining us.
And until next time.
Bye.